Welcome to the 74th episode of Warriors Off Court, the San Francisco Chronicles NBA podcast. I'm your host, Warriors beat writer Connor Letourneau, and today I'm joined by sports columnists Scott Osler and Ann Killian, as well as sports writer Rusty Simmons. They were on hand with me at Oracle Arena for the Warriors' season-ending Game 6 loss to the Raptors in the NBA Finals. Late Thursday night, Scott, Ann, and Rusty sat down with me in the club level of Oracle Arena to break down the possible end of a Warriors dynasty, the ramifications of Klay Thompson's torn ACL, and much, much more. We'll have our conversation right after the break.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
On Thursday, Scott Osler, Ann Killian, and Rusty Simmons sat down with me in Oracle Arena's club level. Not really the way the Warriors wanted to send this one out. The Warriors lost Game 6 of the NBA Finals tonight, as you already know, 114-110. And they lost it at quite a cost. Just came out not long ago. Klay Thompson suffered a torn ACL of his left knee. For those who aren't familiar, that's a 9 to 12 month recovery, which is akin to the recovery timetable that Kevin Durant's looking at with an Achilles. So it's not necessarily as career threatening as an Achilles, but in terms of how much time he's potentially going to miss, it's similar. So you're looking at two of the Warriors' three best players potentially missing all of next season, both of whom are both free agents in three weeks. So there's a lot of questions right now. Before we get into all that, let's get into the game. What'd you guys think of their effort tonight? And was there any point in this game where you thought they were going to pull this one out?
Yeah, I thought they would. I mean, we've been around these guys long enough to know that they're often better when their backs are against the wall and when they actually have a reason to feel like the underdogs. And yeah, by the time you lose Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson hobbles off and gets crutches, that's usually just the time that the Warriors step up and do something amazing.
I kind of threw in the towel when Klay went out, because not only does that leave you one shooter basically, and Steph, who's having an off night anyway, and they're collapsing on it anyway, even with Klay in there, and with him out, plus his defense, he loses defense. So I pretty much left the building when that happened.
Except you didn't, because you had a column to write.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was a great game, by the way. It was exciting from start to finish, and it was a great way to send out Oracle. It was, you know, loud and raucous and thrilling and kind of encapsulated, except for the losing part at the end, it encapsulated a lot of what this Warriors run has been about and what Oracle has brought to it. But I agree with Scott. When Klay went out, I couldn't believe they were actually continued to battle and still be in it within, you know, that they could have won it at the very end, because it just felt like, you know, there was just no chance. And they did. They got behind, and then Sean Livingston and Iguodala made some big plays. I mean, they went down with a fight. I mean, it's hard to kill the king, right?
Exactly. I think they only scored 25 points over the final 14 plus minutes after Thompson left the game, but they ratcheted up their defensive intensity and stayed in it. As soon as I realized that Klay wasn't coming back, I thought there's no chance the Warriors can win this game, because they're already without KD, without Klay. One thing about Toronto is they're relentless. They, no matter what's happening with the Warriors, they don't have peaks and valleys. It feels like they've been pretty consistent. They don't let the foot off the gas like the Warriors have many times this season. So I was not surprised that they lost. I was actually more surprised that it was as close as it was, given everything that happened. Let's take a second before we go any further to reflect a little bit on Toronto, because in my mind, this is I've only covered this team 3 years. Rusty, you'd know better than me, but I feel like this was the toughest opponent the Warriors have faced in the five-year run. That includes the 2016 Cavs. What do you think?
No, I agree with you. You can probably make the argument that because of the Cavs, because they had LeBron, that was a challenge in itself. But Kawhi was the best player in the postseason, all postseason long, and he has so many good parts around him. And it seems like when we watch the NBA these days, it's become like such a specific game of I'm putting this guy in for corner threes or this guy in for defense. And every time you look at everybody on the Toronto roster, you think, oh, he can do it all. Like they've got two-way players up and down the roster. And I thought that stood out throughout the series. They're fast, they're long, and they can do a lot of different things that all mesh together in a pretty impressive team.
And the thing is, they're all pretty much battle-hardened. Most of these guys have been in the finals before, Siakam not. And so he looked like the guy that might be choking because he had a really big first game, and then he kind of went in the deep freeze for four games. And people are thinking, and he was like 0 for 12 three-pointers coming into this game. Hadn't hit a three-pointer since the first game. Sat out the last 9 minutes of last game because of his crappy defense. And he comes out firing, right? Hits two threes right away. And so if these guys were going to choke, that was going to be the time they were going to do it. And when they declined to choke, then I think that was that put the Warriors in a tough spot right from the beginning.
Yeah, I think they're a great team, great champion, worthy champion, as Steve Kerr called them after the game. I think they were, they were a worthy opponent for the Warriors. They did a lot of the same things that the Warriors do. They're really interesting. They seem to have good connection on the court and good chemistry off the court. And I find them to be a really likable team. Now, I don't know if they're going to be that same team. I don't know if this is the start of anything for them because there's so many questions about Kawhi, who just won his second finals MVP. And, that's a big question. But it was a pretty cool unit with a lot of interesting personalities and a lot of talent and a lot of grit. And the moment never, ever, ever got too big for them, which is kind of surprising. I mean, yeah, they are really experienced, but as a group together, they'd never – they hadn't gotten to a spot like this, and nothing seemed to bother them. So, to win it on the road against the two-time defending champions, even with a depleted roster that the Warriors had, but I still think it was pretty impressive.
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear they're a better team because, okay, the injuries were huge. I understand that. But they won in six games. That's 24 quarters. They won, 19 or 20 of the 24 quarters the Raptors did. They outran the Warriors. They matched them with three-pointers. Their defense was least equal to the Warriors. They do the kind of switching defense that they kind of learned from the Warriors, that the Warriors taught everybody. So they kind of took the Warriors game and beat them with it.
Yeah, I mean, they're deeper. I think they shot better. I think they're a more complete roster. They're not quite as top heavy, but they have a better bench, they have better role guys, and I think that's one thing you really saw in this series is the Warriors, outside of their all-stars, and when I say all-stars, I'm talking about Clay, Draymond, who I know was not an all-star this year, but I'm counting him, obviously Steph and KD, outside of those four guys, they're really not that deep. I mean, especially given Cousins was coming back from the quad injury, was pretty inconsistent, had a couple good games at the end of the series, but overall was pretty inconsistent. And then the rest of their bench, you didn't know exactly what you were going to get from them night in and night out. And that's the hard thing about maintaining a dynasty is because you need to restock on the cheap, and it's only going to get harder and harder as we go forward. Kind of reflecting on the season a little bit, it was my third season on the beat. I have to say it was the most dramatic, the most intense, the most interesting in a lot of ways. There was a lot of locker room stuff. Some was reported, some wasn't. Obviously, we all know about the Draymond Durant argument in mid-November. That was kind of symptomatic of a larger issue, which was the fact that Durant never really addressed the speculation around his pending free agency. And so that was kind of a cloud hanging over all the team. And then on top of that, you had the most injuries that you've seen in the entire Steve Kerr era, which obviously mounted in the playoffs. When you guys reflect on the 2018-19 season 10, 15 years from now, what are going to be your biggest takeaways?
My biggest takeaway would be just that it was such a grind. You know, having followed this team through this whole run, you know, you went from joy to kind of that it became a burden. And it's a great burden, and they would all accept it, you know, and that no one's complaining about it. But they were exhausted physically, mentally, and like everything about it seemed difficult. From getting through the regular season to just some of the interactions with the media, you know, the Kevin Durant thing hanging over the team, the just little issues, little things, and, you know, even the first round with the Clippers. I mean, it just all, it was a grind. It was a grind from start to finish. And the fact that they got it this far to be, you know, 1 3-pointer away from forcing a game seven, considering everything that happened in terms of injuries and the weird dynamic that at times, it's still, it's an amazing accomplishment. I mean, yes, they were the prohibitive favorite to repeat or three-peat as champions by most of the people in the league. But when you watch the process day to day, it clearly was never going to be easy for them to do that. And ultimately, they were not able to.
One thing that struck me was the expectations, because they were already the prohibitive favorite to win the whole thing going in. Then they picked up Cousins out of DeMarcus Cousins out of the blue. And I remember the talk then was, oh, my God, this is ridiculous. They're so insanely over-the-top talented, even though DeMarcus is going to miss the first half of the season. That they what are they going to win, 80 games, 75, 80 games? Come on. And people were just throwing in the towel right and left on behalf of the rest of the league. I remember Mark Cuban, I talked to him at the Summer League when Connor, when you couldn't go one day, so I filled in for you. And I asked Cuban, I said, what do you think now that they got DeMarcus Cousins? He said, well, you know, people think that it's sort of a fait accompli, but we have to wait and see how things shake out, because things have a way of shaking out not the way people think they're going to turn out. So turns out Cuban was right, and that weight of expectations might have been kind of a burden.
Yeah, I think Ann hit on one of the things that I would have, is that in 2015 their championship run was joyful. They were chasing something together as a group and enjoying every minute of it. When you do this for five straight years, it's just so much pressure all the time. And I think even when they won the last couple of years, you heard guys talk about relief instead of joy. It wasn't like they were taking pleasure in winning it. It was like, oh, we did what we were supposed to. We're relieved. And I think you saw that on their shoulders all year long. I think they were beat up and tired and sometimes griping at each other and not playing their best. And I think that all played out here in the NBA Finals.
There's a reason why dynasties are rare, and there's a reason why they don't last very long, especially in the modern era where you have social media and you have all this stuff weighing on teams. You can make the argument that the Warriors are really the first dynasty of the social media era, because the last team that was really close was the Spurs, and then before that the early 2000s Lakers. And for either of those teams, so Twitter and Instagram weren't really things. So I think that's been maybe the biggest issue the Warriors had to navigate this season, was just all the speculation, the relentless chatter about Durant's free agency. And these guys are on their phones. They're on social media every day. They can't tune it out. And I think that over time really wore on them as a group.
Yeah. And the fact that on the social media spectrum, they have at least a couple of the highest performing guys. You got Kevin Durant, who pays attention to everything, reads everything. He's on every kind of media you could get, and he's very sensitive. And you got Draymond, who's always kind of on that thing. You got Draymond's mom. And so this is not a team that Kawhi Leonard probably doesn't even know what a Twitter is. I don't know. Right. But these guys are just so hypersensitive to that stuff.
His last tweet was in 2015, and it was about the San Diego State Aztecs. Go Aztecs.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think you hit a good point there in talking about, again, an added pressure that is social media. And it's easy to say, hey, block that stuff out. You guys are so good at compartmentalizing things and getting down to business. It's easy to say that they could be able to block it out, but they can't. They have guys,
especially Durant.
Right.
It doesn't help that a lot of the speculation and chatter was about someone who I don't think physically can get off social media. Right. And he made things worse a lot of times this season, where when there was a lot of talk about him, he would handle it in the worst possible way. When there was all that chatter about his free agency back in February, he dipped out from media for 9 straight days. And so that became a whole huge narrative of the silent superstars not talking to media. And then when he comes back after 9 days, when he comes back after 9 days, he calls out a media member publicly and makes it an even bigger deal than it otherwise would be. And so the fascinating thing about Durant is when he doesn't want something to be talked about anymore, he often fuels the narrative. He makes it worse. And that happened several times this season. It was a fascinating year, and it really does feel – it really felt like tonight in a lot of ways that this was the end of whatever you want to call it, the dynasty, the run, the era. Because, for one, they do have 9 free agents this summer. 2 of them are named Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson. And, oh, by the way, as we alluded to earlier, both those guys might miss all of next season with injuries. So the Warriors are facing – a fascinating next few weeks, because they have to figure out, what do you do with 2 max level caliber players who aren't going to play next season potentially? I mean, do you keep them on the books on max deals if they're willing to come back and just kind of wait around for them to come back, knowing that you have to hodgepodge the roster with minimum contracts? I mean, they're not going to be very good next year if that's the avenue they go. Or do they let those guys walk and just start over? I mean, everything's different now.
I can guarantee you that they're not letting Klay Thompson walk. Yeah. There's no chance in a million years after the way not only he's performed, but the way Klay is one of those guys who's going to have a statue at the Chase Center. Durant's a whole different story, and it's his choice, right? He has the option. So if he wants to rehab here for $31.5 million, that the Warriors have to honor that. And he very well could decide to do that. But yeah, it's going to be a really different team. It could be not a very good team, given, you know, what we've learned in really just like the last 90 minutes. You know, I would have said that they would be a competitive team, maybe not a champion caliber team, going into next year, but they'd be competitive. But without Klay, I don't think so. But it's a whole different thing. And, you know, I mean, I got to say, I'm a big believer in sports karma. There's going to be a lot of people saying this is the karma of leaving Oakland and going to the Chase Center.
We'll see how many light years ahead the Warriors are next year. I almost feel sorry for Joe Lacob. He's going to open up a new arena next season. And those seats are very expensive, and I know that most of them are sold already, but if he has the team that we're kind of talking about, where they'll be scuffling for a playoff spot maybe, he's got to fill a big arena every night, and it might be tough, right?
But here's the thing with how the salary cap works and the CBA is, assuming they bring Klay back, and I agree with that, and I think they will bring Klay back, even if Durant leaves, they're going to be capped out.
Right.
So they're not going to have money to replace Durant, and Klay's not playing. They're not going to be very good next year. I mean, it's going to be Steph and a bunch of other guys, Steph and Draymond and a bunch of other guys. I mean, the question is, given all those circumstances, maybe that ups the chances of the Warriors trading Draymond and trying to get value back for him, because he's already, you know, a year out from what he hopes will be a max contract. And as we've talked about before, we don't know if the Warriors agree with him that he's a max guy. So it's going to be fascinating. I think, we're talking literally minutes after we found this all out, so I haven't had a chance to actually dig into the numbers and think about all the ramifications here. But everything that we've talked about for the past 8 months, the free agency, the speculation, it all just went out the window in like 3 days.
Right.
It's insane.
But the thing about Draymond, we're looking at the box score. He got a triple-double tonight. And this is the heart and souls. I know he's getting older and all this stuff, but can you imagine? Anna's, I think, finding a severe, so bless her heart. So, but it, I forgot what I was going to say. But I know one thing. You better get back to the G League and find that guy. Where's that guy from? Latvia or something like that you did the story on, Connor?
Serbia.
Yeah, the Serbian. He might be the starting center next year.
Well, it does kind of weirdly make the draft more interesting, which is in a few days, because they might need those guys to play. Whoever they draft at 28 might actually matter. They don't want to get another Jacob Evans situation. They want someone that can actually play. And who knows, maybe Jacob Evans will play next season. I mean, that's kind of what they're potentially looking at. It's crazy. And, you know, it makes the whole free agency that much more interesting because it suddenly all those ancillary pieces like the Jordan Bells, the Jonas Jerebkos, the Alfonso McKinneys, the Quinn Cooks, all those guys who are also free agents matter because either you bring them back or you replace them with someone and whoever fills that spot is probably going to need to play. So it's I already knew this summer was going to be crazy, but the last couple of days have made them even crazier.
Yeah, it was funny when you talked about how dramatic and what a grind this season was, and I thought in my head, oh man, just wait until July, you're about to really have some drama and some grind. But it's going to be a return to Stephen Curry and the screen setters, right?
I love that. Did you just come up with that? Right?
I think Osler did that in 2015.
That was not mine. That was a good one.
That's a great one. Yeah.
But that's and we just saw in this entire series when it is just Stephen Curry and the screen setters, a good defensive coach like Nick Nurse will triple team Stephen Curry, right? And then even as talented and special as he is, he's not an MVP at that point. So and that's what the Warriors are looking at right now.
Well, look at the defense the Raptors did on Curry in this series.
Three people on the team.
You know, I don't have the series stats, but Steph had a bad series in terms of threes and didn't have a great series overall. I had a couple of fantastic games and really a great player, obviously, but Klay outshot him like crazy from three. Klay was hot from three, but Steph couldn't. They didn't give any room. They triple-teamed him. They double-teamed him. They bombed him. They crashed him. They held him. He had no windows. The shots he did make were crazy. The difficulty was crazy. So, but, yeah, if you could see that, project that to next year. Yeah. Every team's doing, because other teams watched this finals, I think. Right. They got video, and they're saying, okay, what did they do? Now, he's going to face the same thing next year with basically a lot of times no help.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's the first thing I would do if I was an NBA head coach is I would just go study the film for the last quarter plus from tonight and do that exact same defense on Steph because based off everything we're talking about, it might be that same lineup out for most of next season, which is unbelievably daunting for Steph, who we know has a history of ankle issues and can get injured. And he does have a relatively slight frame when it comes to NBA builds. And if he has to shoulder that type of load all season, that type of defense all season, you can't expect him to be at his best come playoffs, even if, you know, Klay or hypothetically Durant come back come playoff time. You might be cashed in on Curry at that point. I mean, this is a scary future that we're looking at with the Warriors. I mean, it and it's gotten so much worse in the past couple of days.
Maybe the Warriors will just pull off the San Antonio Spurs thing. I mean, that's one of the reasons why they were able to maintain a dynasty for so long is that they had one year where David Robinson was hurt and they said, well, then we're not going to play anybody. We're not going to be good. We're going to tank. And then they got Tim Duncan, and the dynasty continued. The Warriors have to consider something like that. Do you try to be an 8 seed, and you know you can't win a championship? Is that worth it to you?
Wait a second. You're talking about the Warriors going into Chase Center next year and tanking.
Yeah,
that'll go over really well.
I don't think Jake would.
I just paid $800,000 for a season ticket, and these guys are tanking. Yeah, great.
I mean, the fact that you just mentioned the words 8 seed with the Warriors and you weren't joking blows my mind. It's insane. Was this a worst-case scenario finals for the Warriors?
Yeah, absolutely. The best case in retrospect in all of 90 minutes now or whatever it is, 2 hours, is they should not have won game two. That way they could have gotten swept and they would have Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson healthy. And they would still have the same outcome, which is losing. You know, I mean, it would have been a bummer and there wouldn't have been this night at Oracle. But I don't know that squeaking out a game six and even a game five, is the price you paid in these two games is unbelievable. And like we are talking about, is going to have repercussions, not just next year, but for years and years to come. So I really, you know, the more we talk about it, it already felt like the end tonight, just because it was the end of Oracle, and it just really felt like kind of a closing moment of something. It really feels like this is the end of the dynasty, because I think it's going to take, it's not just going to take a year to recover from something like this, because you don't know, one, if both players are coming back, you don't know what they're going to be like when they come back, and you don't know, you know, I mean, a lot of these young guys were disappointing. There's a lot of work to do. Can we just talk about who's the real MVP of tonight?
And Killian.
Thank you. You can tell the people why I'm tell the people why I'm the MVP.
I'm going to tell them, because I think there's a surveillance camera over there, and you might be getting a call tomorrow from somebody for tapping their beer keg. But thanks anyway. I'm glad we're not in the video. But one thing I was going to say about Durant, it was like a best and worst case scenario, because his injury probably cemented his bond with the team, because the way his team reacted and the way he reacted was just a love fest, and he's probably thinking, I got to come back with these guys. And of course, if he comes back, he's not going to be playing, so that's the bad news.
You know who I feel really bad for right now? Rick Celebrini.
Yeah.
Can you imagine being a first-year NBA head trainer? Never been a full-time trainer in the NBA. Was working at MLS for the previous 5 or 6 years before this. Being dropped into this situation where all the spotlights are on you now. And the thing is, I know the Warriors love him. You know, by all accounts, he's phenomenal at his job. You got to wonder if there's going to be any pressure on the Warriors to let a guy go just because of the universal backlash against the training staff. They're going to blame the training staff for this. And the reality of the situation is, he probably walked into a tricky situation to begin with, just because by the time he got here, there was already such a cumulative toll on all these bodies. Part of this might have been somewhat inevitable, honestly. Even though the Warriors did everything they could in terms of limiting the core guys' minutes and finding rest days. I mean, or it could have just been a bunch of freak luck, as you wrote yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, I think injuries. These are two different injuries, and I would not say that Clay's in an ACL. I mean, I've torn my ACL. It's usually a freak kind of thing. It's not necessarily related to something else. So
didn't you do that trying to reach for a beer can?
Yes, the last time I was trying to tap a beer keg in a suite late at night. I think there's a certain dose of bad luck. There's a certain amount of its wear and tear, and a certain amount of it's just bad luck.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that they will, they will not fire Rick Celebrini, because unless there's a smoking gun, the smoking gun would be if somebody somewhere comes up with information that they knew that Kevin Durant, it was a reasonable possibility he would blow out his Achilles. From what we know now, it was just a freak thing, and they didn't know that. And if somebody shows people evidence that he either knew that or should have known that, then maybe his job is in jeopardy. But failing that, I don't think so. Just, you know, it's bad luck. It's sports. People get hurt.
But that's us sitting around here having a logical conversation. Unfortunately, that's not what most of society does. They're going to see that Kevin Durant had a right leg injury that may have been the calf or may have been a little lower where he actually grabbed when he hurt. And then you're going to see a game later that Klay Thompson, playing on an injured left hamstring, tears his ACL in his left leg. People are going to connect dots to this thing, even if it's not right.
I'll say this. I hope Rick Celebrini doesn't have a Twitter feed.
Right.
I don't think he does. Yeah. I don't think he does. Super nice guy. And like I said, considered one of the top sports physiotherapists in the world. So I'm not blaming him. I understand why people are. But I feel for him, because he has a lot of investment in these guys, and on a personal level, when he's training with them, he gets to really know them. And I know it kills him in a really serious way to see all this happen. I don't know if you guys looked at his face after when he was helping Durant off the court after game five, but he looked just as destroyed as Durant did. So
how do you think he felt tonight when Clay not only went down, but then walked into the tunnel, obviously
he just turned
seriously
around.
Injured, turned around and came back on the court. Celebrini must have wanted to. Celebrini must have wanted to just do a flying tackle on the guy.
He didn't like consult with anyone. They have a video of it. He just turned around and started walking, and I think everyone was kind of stunned. Like, wait, what are you doing? Just turned around.
Can I just say? I mean, I know it's sad now that we know he tore his ACL, but that was one of the great moments at Oracle. It was the most Clay thing ever. He's being carried down the tunnel, and all of a sudden he pops back out, and it's just like, oh, there's Clay.
He hit both free throws,
and I guess he was doing jumping jacks or something in the tunnel.
You know what it reminded me of? You guys ever go way back? James Brown, the famous hardest working man in show business, the soul guy. And at his concerts, he always had a thing. Towards the end of his concerts, he'd do this exhausting concert. And then he'd collapse on the stage. And one of his handlers would come out and put a cape over him and start leading him off the stage. And he could barely walk. All of a sudden, then he would throw the cape off and run back on the stage and do a fantastic song. And then they would do that two or three times. But that was Clay tonight. It's like he threw off that James Brown cape and just came back ready to rip, or hope to rip.
You know what would have warranted Rick Celebrini getting fired is if he had let Clay actually play the rest of the game, because I'm sure Clay made a case.
He
would have tried to play.
Right.
And I'm not a doctor, but I know that could have severe repercussions.
The only thing that could have made the situation any better, and it was dramatic and beautiful and as loud as I can remember it being in here when Clay comes charging back down the tunnel to shoot the free throw. But if we could have had audio of him telling Coach Kerr, I'll be back in 2 minutes. just need to walk this off. And then him going into the locker room and sprinting around the locker room and doing jumping jacks, trying to do anything he can to convince the doctors to let him come back out, that would have just wrapped up the whole thing. That would have been perfect.
But that was like a movie. The Last Night at Oracle would be the name of the movie, and that would be one of the dramatic scenes. This complete idiot running back, and I mean it in the kindest way, because Clay is like the weirdest athlete in Bay Area history in a very nice way, in the best way.
When Clay was 12 years old, he broke his foot and he pitched a little league game.
Yeah.
On a broken foot. Like, this is deeply ingrained in who he is. And people like to say, oh, you're son of an NBA player. You grew up in the burbs. You're soft. There's something really deeply ingrained in his DNA that makes him like this. Like he almost feels like inhuman. It's unbelievable. 120 straight playoff games before sitting out game three. He went three seasons without missing a game.
The only game he missed was to go to a funeral.
Was to go to his grandfather's funeral. He has played the most games of any NBA player since 2011-12 outside of DeAndre Jordan, randomly. DeAndre Jordan has one more game than him.
That's so weird.
But Clay also plays for Team USA in the summer. You know what I mean? So just you think about the mileage on his body.
It's not only that, but
By the way, the Olympic team just took a pretty major hit too, because I don't think either Clay or Durant are going to be playing in Tokyo in 2020.
And Curry shouldn't either, because he's going to have plenty of work next season.
Yeah, but he really wants to.
Yeah. Anyway, I want to thank all our listeners for sticking with us all season. It's been really fun seeing Warriors off court grow as much as it has the past few months. We're going to, you know, even though the season's over, we're still going to keep this thing going at least once a week throughout the off season, at least while I'm working. I am going to take a break from like mid-July to mid-September.
You can't do it.
I don't believe it for a second.
But until then, we still have the draft coming up. We have free agency. As we know, free agency is going to be insane. Then we have summer league. So there's still plenty to talk about, plenty to digest. Always stay locked and loaded at sfchronicle.com. And I want to thank my colleagues here for sticking with me and helping me so much on the beat this year. It's been a lot of fun. I feel really good about the work we did. So, thank you guys.
Got it.
Warriors Off Court is part of the San Francisco Chronicle Podcast Network. Audrey Cooper is the editor-in-chief. If you like this show, we'd love it if you subscribe to it wherever you get your podcasts. And if you've got a minute to give us a quick review, that helps us build our audience so we can keep growing. Follow me on Twitter at @con_cron and email me at cleturno@sfchronicle.com. Support Warriors Off Court and a lot of great journalism with a subscription to the San Francisco Chronicle. There are print and digital editions. Find out more at sfchronicle.com/subscribe.